KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski says Health Secretary Robert Kennedy has pledged to preserve the Indian Health Service. She says she reached Kennedy by phone last weekend.
He was given a mandate to make a 10% reduction across the board throughout health and social services. And after we had our conversation, he committed to me that there were going to be no reductions at IHS, Indian Health Services, on his watch. It was important to have that line of communication.
Murkowski voted for Kennedy's confirmation despite her disapproval of his decades-long campaigns to undermine trust in vaccines. She defended that vote by saying she has to find a way to work with top officials in the Trump administration to represent her constituents' concerns. And she says Kennedy's IHS pledge shows her approach is already paying off. Meanwhile, Congresswoman Shelley Pingree and Senator Jeff Merkley, ranking Democratic members on subcommittees that oversee funding for the Department of the Interior, are urging the Trump administration to reinstate terminated Indian Affairs employees. They're also calling for the federal hiring freeze to be lifted and to rescind early retirement offers. In a letter sent to Interior Secretary Doug Burgum Thursday, the lawmakers asked the administration to instead work to strengthen and grow Indian Affairs staff to best meet the needs of American Indians and Alaska Natives. They say many of the Indian Affairs programs tribal communities rely on are already underfunded and understaffed, and that the administration's actions are damaging, implemented without tribal consultation, and put vital Indian Country services at risk. Wisconsin tribal nations are working toward energy autonomy. They're using renewable energy and creating economic opportunities, as Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
Tribal nations have historically faced challenges to own and control their own electricity, even though a significant number of plant and utility infrastructure are in close proximity to reservation lands. Isaiah Ness founded Sunbear Industries after witnessing disproportionate opportunities in the renewable energy space.
There's not much disparity in the type of person that was receiving solar. It was one of those things that you could see the common trend very easily.
Ness now helps Indigenous and minority communities in Wisconsin to build renewable energy infrastructure with an emphasis on intersecting cultural appreciation and economic opportunities. The Menominee Nation is working to achieve energy sovereignty by 2035. Part of that vision began with their Solar Elder Project, which was created to ensure elder community members are never without power during outages. Ness says reservations typically have high power demands, and having autonomy over that is key.
It makes more sense for them to have on-reservation power-producing plants and facilities that are also sourced from clean energy, and then for them to be able to reinvest into their own community. And so this concept of a virtuous cycle is seeing how far and how many cycles can we make out of $1 that is injected into renewable energy.
Community partnerships and grants have been a crucial component to the progress Indigenous communities have made thus far. The Inflation Reduction Act allocated about $400 billion toward climate initiatives, with a large portion dedicated to renewable energy projects through tax incentives and grants for tribes. Uncertainty looms on whether programs like these will be included in proposed spending cuts under the Trump administration. I'm Judith Ruiz Branch reporting.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Enbridge strives to be a good steward of the environment, a safe operator of essential energy infrastructure, and a good neighbor. More on Enbridge's Indigenous Reconciliation Action Plan at Enbridge.com. Enbridge proudly supports this program.
DT Track, your healthcare partner, provides access to a nationwide network of qualified healthcare temporary staff, including medical billing professionals that optimize your revenue cycles. More at dt-track.com who support this show.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
I don't see how I can support the bill without having the money. I'm interested to hear what the majority's proposals are to be able to fund the bill.
Bleak budget projections complicate lawmakers' plans to boost education funding. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, February 21st. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, facing massive cuts to school programs, families in Anchorage consider leaving.
We cannot stay in this city if our children's education continues to be attacked. It's not an option.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. If you would like to play an integral part in what you're listening to, public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. If you are already a member or corporate sponsor, thank you. If you'd like to learn more about how to become a member or sponsor, it's easy. Start with a call to your public radio station. Local sponsors do right by their business and for the community by supporting public media stations. Thank you for considering adding your corporate support. You'll be in good company.
Lawmakers heard this week that they're facing even larger deficits than they previously thought. As Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, that's complicating a key priority for Majority Caucus lawmakers in the House and Senate, boosting funding for public schools.
After one hearing and with little discussion, the House Finance Committee has put a high-priority bill that would substantially boost state education funding on the brink of reaching the floor for a final vote. But it's also facing stiff opposition from Minority Caucus Republicans.
I can tell you right now, I don't see any way that the legislature, under our current fiscal regime, has any way to meet these obligations if this bill were to pass.
That's Fairbanks Republican Representative Will Stapp questioning the sponsor of the House's top education funding bill, Sitka Independent Representative Rebecca Himshute. The bill would boost education spending by more than $325 million next year, with additional increases the following 2 years. A few days earlier, lawmakers heard some grim projections about the state's finances. Between the current year's budget and next year's, legislators are short more than $530 million to maintain what is essentially the status quo. Senate leaders say dipping into the state's main savings account isn't on the table. Senate Finance Committee co-chair Senator Lyman Hoffman, a Bethel Democrat, says it would be irresponsible to spend the savings account on what are typical operating expenses. And Hoffman says that leaves lawmakers with few options.
If we're going to meet our obligations, we need to, I believe, address new revenues.
Major revenue measures, though, have been few and far between. The only bill to get serious consideration so far comes from an unexpected source, a conservative Minority Caucus Republican senator. Wasilla Senator Robert Yount filed a bill that would expand the state's corporate income tax to cover so-called S corporations. The bill is widely expected to apply to just one taxpayer, Hillcorp. Yount says it's all about leveling the playing field. So-called C corporations like ExxonMobil and ConocoPhillips pay state income taxes, but S corps don't.
It's real money. I'm here to count pennies, nickels, right? Dimes, quarters, and dollars. And, you know, an average family of four in Alaska right now, this one loophole is over $700 a year.
For the state, it would raise $185 million in its first year and $125 million the next. Members of the largely Democratic bipartisan Senate majority welcome the proposal, but it's unclear whether it has support in the House. Which brings us back to Stapp's question. How are lawmakers going to pay for a boost in school funding? Education bill sponsor Rebecca Himshute's answer was essentially that they have no choice. The state constitution obligates legislators to fund public schools.
At the end of the day, everyone in our state has a right to a high-quality education. We're going to have to figure it out.
That led Stapp, a Minority Caucus lawmaker, to do the legislative equivalent of throwing his hands up in frustration.
I'm interested to hear what the majority's proposals are to be able to fund the bill, but I will absolutely bite. I know this is a big priority for you guys, so Mr. Co-Chair, with the permission of the committee, I'm going to go ahead and see if I can move the bill.
And he did. At its first hearing, the bill passed out of the Finance Committee with no opposition. That leaves it on the brink of a final House floor vote. But when it might come up for a final vote, if ever, is an open question. Shortly before the bill moved from the Finance Committee, Governor Mike Dunleavy said the standalone funding bill, quote, does not have my support. Representative Andy Josephson, an Anchorage Democrat who co-chairs the House Finance Committee, says for now, the majority is holding out hope that lawmakers and the governor can come to an agreement.
Cynics might say, yeah, but they won't bear fruit. But we're told that they may very well bear fruit. And we want to get, as I noted in Finance Committee, to a win-win with the administration.
But even if a compromise is reached, it'll still take money to pay for it. And back at the Senate Finance Committee, lawmakers are steeling themselves for some tough choices. Here are Senators James Kaufman, Lyman Hoffman, and Jesse Keel.
I think we need to add scissors to this tray of equipment on our desk.
Red pens, maybe.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Keel.
Or Zoloft.
They've got a little less than 3 months to figure it out. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
Snow is melting early across large swaths of Alaska this year, threatening snow removal companies in Anchorage and even moving the Iditarod starting line hundreds of miles north. But it could also mean a big wildfire season for certain parts of the state. As Shelby Herbert reports for the Alaska Desk, scientists are already encouraging people to prepare.
Many of Alaska's most extreme wildfire seasons started with an early snow-off, the last day of the year when snow is visible in a certain area. That's the conclusion of a University of Alaska Fairbanks study published in early January that synthesized almost a century of Alaska fire weather data. Peter Bieniek, a climate scientist at UAF, co-authored that study. He says his research group found that snow is melting much earlier than in the past due to human-caused climate change.
There's a definite trend toward earlier snow-off in Alaska. That's kind of throughout the state. On top of that, we've had in the last few decades more frequent of these extreme fire years. You know, over a million acres is kind of how we define that.
Bieniek says the warm conditions that caused the snow to melt in the first place also accelerate hot, dry fire weather in the summer months.
So what happens during an early snow-off year? That's typically means you have a warm spring. You know, when you have a lot of fire, you also typically have, you know, warmer Junes and Julys that follow that. Those warm conditions that started and resulted in the earlier snowbelt kind of persisted into the fire season in some form.
The UAF research team that put together the study shared its knowledge and took input from fire managers and experts across the state, like Heidi Strader, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service. Strader says it's too early to get a clear picture of what peak fire season will look like, but the study gives fire management agencies a pretty good idea of where to allocate resources in the spring.
This year is unique, as all years are, but the southern part of the state, around much of south central, parts of southwest, for instance, over into Bristol Bay, has a lot of areas that are snow-free, and that's not normal. Meanwhile, up in the interior here, we actually have a pretty decent snowpack going, although we do have an ice layer in there, which nobody loves, but it's there and it is moisture.
That's all to say that Alaska could see an early spring season with fires starting earlier than normal in southern Alaska. But the historically fire-prone area just south of the Brooks Range is fairly safe for now. Strader says it's possible that those conditions could change. South Central could still get a huge snow dump in March, which could mellow a severe fire season. But state and federal wildfire managers are still asking Alaskans to get ready. Beth Ipson is a spokesperson for the Bureau of Land Management Fire Service in Alaska, which coordinates wildfire response. She says, even though there's some snow on the ground, this is a good time for the public to help mitigate fire risk.
Public and firefighter safety is number one priority. And the public can help us out with that by being prepared. You know, prepare the property, prepare themselves in case they need to evacuate, and just be very aware of what's going on in the situation. Basically, just help us help you.
Ipson recommends that Alaskans in fire-prone areas start pruning trees, especially black spruce, within about 10 feet of their homes, consider installing a metal roof, and start stocking up on emergency supplies. And maybe most importantly, she says folks in rural areas should get to know their neighbors. That's because in an emergency, they're the first people they'll have to rely on, especially when help is hours away. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Shelby Herbert.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a star-studded lineup takes on the Bogus Creek 150 sled dog race in Bethel.
When I started this job in 2020, there were typically less than 10 racers in the Bogus Creek 150, and so it's just absolutely great to see 16 teams.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. The greatest compliment to a public media station is when a listener becomes a member. So do your part today by becoming a part of the team officially. Thank you for making a donation.
Anchorage firefighters saved four people early this morning from a blaze at a former Spenard hotel. The fire department says more than 30 firefighters responded just before 7 a.m. to the fire along Spenard Road at the vacant America's Best Value Inn and Suites. They found four people trapped by flames on a third-story balcony. Fire crews rescued all four using a ladder truck. None of them were hurt. Officials didn't have any immediate word today on the origin or cause of the fire, which gutted much of the building's third floor. The Anchorage Daily News reported that a 2022 fire in the same building displaced nearly half of the hotel's 44 guests at the time. Crews remained at the scene for much of the day to put out any remaining hotspots. Meanwhile, Anchorage police shot and killed a man who allegedly held people hostage this morning in a room at a Midtown hotel. It's the second fatal shooting by officers this year. Police Chief Sean Case says officers responded at around 3:50 a.m. today to the Hampton Inn off West Tudor Road. Security from the hotel reported a suspicious vehicle that they believed was stolen, Case says, and one of the two people who left the vehicle went into a hotel room. A SWAT team responded to the call, and Case says a separate negotiation team was able to make contact with the suspect.
While that communication was taking place, two rounds were fired through the door, presumably at the officers as they were on the outside of the room.
Case says officers didn't immediately go into the room after shots were fired. In total, he says there were six people in the room, including the suspect. Some of them were children.
At one point in time, officers observed a crime being committed against one of the occupants of the room. Officers made entry into the room and fired at least one round at the subject, where he was later pronounced deceased on scene.
The suspect was declared dead just after 9 a.m., roughly 5 hours after officers responded. Case declined to elaborate on what type of crime was committed or how officers knew the crime took place. He says none of the officers or children were injured, but he couldn't confirm how many of the hostages were adults and if any of those adults were injured. Earlier this month, police shot and killed a man after they say he pointed a gun at vehicles driving along West Tudor Road. In total, Anchorage officers have shot four people this year. Last year, Anchorage police shot eight people. Five of them died. The Anchorage School Board is preparing to vote on a budget that makes significant cuts that will impact every student in the district. The board has heard nearly 6 hours of testimony on the cuts in the last 3 weeks. As Alaska Public Media's Tim Rocky reports, some parents question whether it's worth it to keep their student enrolled in the district.
At a recent meeting, 98 people pleaded with the school board not to cut programs that benefit them or their children. Zaylee Mullinax is a sophomore on the swim team at Diamond High School. She told the board school swim teams help students learn a life skill available at a low cost compared to club teams.
Swimming boosts cognitive abilities and brain health, which leads to an improvement in school as well. Swimming also creates many job opportunities that we can put on our college resumes, like lifeguarding and teaching swim lessons. And many of the Diamond Swim and Dive athletes from this last season are teaching swim lessons at Swim America, where an average of 240 kids a week are taught a life-saving skill.
Testifiers included high school swimmers, gymnasts, students in French and German immersion programs, students in gifted programs, school nurses, and advocates for the Alaska State School for Deaf and Hard of Hearing, among many others. The current budget proposal would eliminate all middle school sports, high school gymnastics, swimming, and hockey, the Ignite program for gifted students, as well as many nurses, counselors, and staff for language immersion programs across the district. It also increases the student-teacher ratio by 4 across all grades. Dozens of people responded to an Alaska Public Media request for input about the proposed cuts. Almost all opposed the budget cuts and argued that their children's education would be negatively impacted by eliminating special programs and sports. Christina McDonough and her husband James have 3 children. She says her family is considering moving out of state because of the proposed cuts.
We love Anchorage. We're so proud of where our kids are and what we put together for them. But we cannot stay in this city if our children's education continues to be attacked. It's not an option.
Christina's husband, James Johnston, came to the United States from Ireland. He credits their oldest child's increased engagement in class to the Ignite program that would be cut.
I was blown away when I first got here and I seen what my kids have available to them after school as part of the education, you know? And I can see from both sides, you know, and it doesn't make sense to cut that stuff.
The school board is required to submit a balanced budget to the Anchorage Assembly by March 3rd, but still don't know what level of funding they'll receive from the state for next year. Lawmakers and Governor Mike Dunleavy both support a boost to state funding for education, but so far they haven't reached a compromise that could pass the House and Senate and be signed into law. At a recent meeting, Anchorage School District Chief Financial Officer Andy Ratliff said last year, district officials did not know how much money the state would provide until the end of June. Ratliff said the current budget proposal cuts over 200 teaching positions, along with spending the district's reserve funding down to the lowest amount permissible by state statute.
We took cuts to pretty much every area to get this to balance. And frankly, it's going to be difficult to implement.
Janet Linnell is a former educator who drives her child to school so they can attend one of the district's Ignite programs for gifted learners. She says the special programs that would be cut are what make children love school.
As an educator, when they delete schools and delete teachers from staff and increase class sizes, it takes the magic of and the art and the love out of your classroom.
District officials may be able to reinstate some programs if the legislature passes a funding increase, but fear that laid off staff may not return without long-term budget stability. The school board will hear more public testimony and vote on the budget on February 25th. In Anchorage, I'm Tim Rocky.
It's well documented by now that temperatures are rising with climate change and that glaciers are melting because of it. But a sweeping new report says glacier loss in Alaska specifically is outpacing 18 other regions across the globe. That's bad news for mountainous coastal regions like Southeast Alaska, where scientists say the loss is greatest and happening most quickly. The Alaska Desk's Avery Elfelt has the story.
Every year, hundreds of thousands of tourists flock to Glacier Bay National Park near Haines to see the towering ice formations hanging over the water below. But that ice is melting, and fast. A new report published this month in the journal Nature examines the trend here and in 18 other regions across the globe, including the Alps, Andes, and Himalayas. Researchers concluded that the world's glaciers have lost about 5% of their ice since 2000, and that they're melting faster than ever. But Alaska takes the cake. The report says the state's glaciers have shrunk by more than 8% over the same time period, the fastest of any region. All told, Alaska alone accounts for the largest chunk, or nearly a quarter, of global glacier loss. It's an important finding that visitors can see with their own eyes, says Tyler Sutterly, the report's co-author and scientist at the University of Washington.
You go to the ice field in Alaska, you can see visually the bathtub ring of where those glaciers were a few decades ago and where they are now. All a glacier expert does is take that stuff that you can see by the eye by going to these ice fields and just putting it all together.
Alaska is warming 2 to 3 times faster than the global average, and the state has a lot of glaciers to lose. According to the National Park Service, Alaska is home to nearly 20,000 glaciers that cover an area nearly the size of West Virginia. The vast majority of melting is happening in mountainous, coastal regions like Southeast, where glaciers are more concentrated. Glacier Bay National Park, for instance, has lost about 20% of its glacial area since 1985. The new report in Nature is the result of a collaboration between dozens of international scientists who study glaciers and how they're responding to climate change. Satterley says the goal was to compare, contrast, and combine more than 200 regional estimates of glacier weight to develop one of the most comprehensive understandings of glacier loss worldwide.
Tens of thousands of glaciers taken together are a phenomenal metric for measuring climate change.
Scientists use a range of methods to get that measurement. Among them, satellite imagery, which can be used to create a three-dimensional picture. They can also fire radars or lasers from space to measure changes in topography. Another wonky method is called gravimetry. It measures Earth's gravity field and provides insight into things like ocean circulation and glacier growth and loss. Satterley says scientists have conducted similar research on the massive ice sheets in Greenland and Antarctica, but this project instead looks at the smaller glaciers that are found in more places. In some ways, Satterley says, it's a more challenging task because they're smaller, more difficult to see from space, and located in less accessible places. Think the ragged mountains that tower over Haines, Skagway, and Gustavus.
These are individually smaller, but are huge parts of the landscape and are very important for freshwater resources, tourism, river health, and also they are similarly contributors to sea level.
As temperatures rise, parts of the state that are famous for and reliant on the ice formations are seeing more rain, less snow, and smaller glaciers. In Haines, I'm Avery Allfelt.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
IBEW's path to success includes excellent training, good wages, benefits, and a comfortable retirement. Join the IBEW and build a bright future. Call 907-575-7285 to find out more. This message sponsored by IBEW Local 1547.
Alaska Pacific University offers new and transfer students a wide range of scholarships, grants, and other financial assistance. Apply for admission to be considered automatically for most scholarships. And complete your financial aid application by priority deadlines to receive optimal consideration. Financial aid counselors are available to assist. Learn more at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
At least 16 mushers and their dogs are set to race from Bethel to Bogus Creek and back this weekend in the annual Bogus Creek 150 Sled Dog Race. KYUK's Sage Smiley reports what to expect from the race and how to keep track of the action.
This winter started warm, wet, and with very little snow. But for sled dog racing on the Kuskokwim, race manager Paul Basil says right now, it's looking all right.
I think we're in pretty good shape. The trail is not great, as it was a few weeks ago for the K300, but it's in decent shape. That little bit of snow we got earlier this week helped.
The annual Bogus Creek 150 Sled Dog Race is scheduled for a mass start on the Kuskokwim River in front of Bethel at 3 p.m. on Saturday, February 22nd. As of Thursday evening, 16 teams were registered to run the Bogus. The K300 committee, which organizes the Bogus and other regional races, hadn't published the final roster as of Thursday evening. But Basil says there are quite a few former Bogus champions registered, including defending champ Raymond Alexi, K300 champion Pete Kaiser, Maurice Andrews, Louis Pavela, Mike Williams Jr., and even Richie Deal coming out of retirement to race a Kaiser team. The deep field also includes a few first-time Bogus racers, including 15-year-old Spiridon Cheney of Nebraska, who will be racing a team of his Uppa's dogs. Basil says that since the K300 committee separated the race from the same weekend as the Kuskokwim 300 and Akiak Dash 5 years ago, there's been strong regional participation.
When I started this job in 2020, there were typically less than 10 racers in the Bogus Creek 150, and so it's just absolutely great to see 16 teams. It's just a more competitive, more exciting event.
The race was rescheduled twice this year from its original early January date, the first time because of poor training conditions, and the second when the Kuskokwim 300 was bumped back by 2 weeks because of trail concerns. For the Kuskokwim 300, that worked out perfectly. Mushers raved about the trail conditions and snowpack.
We had some warm weather that came in during K300 and persisted for a few days after, so we lost a lot of that snow. Particularly on the river and on lakes and streams.
Much of the bogus 150 trail this weekend will be ice and hard-packed snow, Basil says.
All of the folks who race out here have certainly seen worse.
But Basil says conditions upriver near Bogus Creek itself have improved in recent weeks. The race will follow what's known as the traditional route, going up the Tooloksack River to Little Bogus Creek, then Big Bogus Creek to the halfway checkpoint, where teams will take a mandatory 4 hours of rest. Mushers and their dogs are competing for a cut of a $100,000 race purse, the second year in a row of a 25% purse increase. The winner will take home $15,000.
I think because it's a local event, folks don't realize that a $100,000 purse in the sport of dog mushing is a very big deal. By purse size, one of the biggest races in the world. And so, I think we're going to see some great competitors competing for a whole lot of money, and it's going to be exciting.
Basil says there are a lot of ways to stay engaged with the Bogus Creek 150, including hitting the ice road to watch teams travel upriver.
This race in particular, and with the way things are on the river right now, it's going to be a really great opportunity for folks to be out there on the trail.
In Bethel, I'm Sage Smiley.
The Iditarod Trail Committee announced Monday that the race restart will shift north this year, with the route beginning in Fairbanks instead of Willow due to a lack of snow on a portion of the southern route. But the precise location for that restart remained unclear until Thursday, that is. KUAC's Patrick Gilchrist reports.
For us, the carnival is coming to town.
That's Jay Ramris, owner of Pike's Waterfront Lodge. The Iditarod restart has moved up to Fairbanks three previous times in race history, in 2003, 2015, and 2017. And each of those 3 years, Pike's property on the Chino River has been the spot for mushers to begin their Iditarod journey. This year will be the fourth. And Ramris says he quipped about that number's significance with mushing legend Dave Munson and T-Dog 200 organizer Tekla Butcher Munson. She's the daughter of Munson and four-time Iditarod champion Susan Butcher, who died of leukemia in 2006.
And I told them that in the world of hospitality, since this was our fourth time hosting the Iditarod, that would be considered a championship host of the Iditarod. So I've now tied Susan Butcher's record of a four-time Iditarod champ, and we all had a good laugh over that over coffee.
Ramris says the pieces started falling into place after Monday's announcement, and that logistical prep work on Pike's end is already underway, including things like formulating a safety protocol in coordination with Alaska State Troopers.
We want to, you know, roll out the red carpet so that when the weather is sketchy the next time, they don't hesitate to come up here for the fifth restart in Fairbanks.
The ceremonial start event will still take place in Anchorage on March 1st at 10 a.m. The 33 teams will then pack up and head north for the restart at Pikes, which is set for March 3rd at 11 a.m. In Fairbanks, I'm Patrick Gilchrist.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Eric Stone in Juneau, Shelby Herbert and Patrick Gilchrist in Fairbanks, Chris Clint in Anchorage, Avery Elfelt in Haines, and Sage Smiley in Bethel. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky's our producer, and I'm Wesley Early. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support. Public media is about you, the community we serve. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
up with it, girl. Rock with it, girl. Show them it, girl. With a bang bang. Bounce with it, girl. Dance with it, girl. Get with it, girl. With a bang bang.
Come on, come on. Turn the radio on. It's Friday night and I won't be long. Gotta do my hair, put my makeup on.
To the floor and me see your energy because me not play no hide and seek. What is the thing you ever make me feel weak, girl? Free! Cause anytime you whine and catch it, the selector pull it up and put it on repeat, girl. Up, me not touch a dollar in my pocket, cause nothing in this world ain't more than what you worth.
I don't need no money.
You worth more than diamond, more than gold.
As long as I can feel the beat.
Make the beat just take control.
As long as I keep dancing.
Free up yourself, get out of control.
Baby,
didn't know.
Kinda like a light shine down and show.
I the dreamer or the dream? Is it possible to know?
Baby, you light up my world like nobody else. The way that you
Thank you. living my life in a slow hell. Different girl every night at the hotel. I ain't seen the sunshine in 3 damn days. Been fueling up on cocaine and whiskey. Wish I had a good girl to miss me. Lord, I wonder if I'll ever change my ways. I put your picture away, sat down and cried today. I can't look at you while I'm lying next to her. I put your picture away, sat down and cried today. I can't look at you while I'm lying next to her.
I called you last night in the hotel. Everyone knows, but they won't tell. But their half-hearted smiles tell me something just ain't right. I've been waiting on you for a long time, fueling up on heartaches and cheap wine. I ain't heard from you in 3 damn nights. I put your picture
just